Hi, and welcome to Newscast Episode 34. I'm your host for this evening, Neil Ronahan. What date is this for? Saturday something? Or Saturday, January 1st, actually, right?
Yeah.
Ooh,
that's right.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
It's the first one of the new year and the first one of us going weekly. And with us right now, we got Andy Gergen.
Hey.
Nathan Mustafa.
Hello.
And special guest Carl Castaneda.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And right now we are waiting on Zach, so Zachary Miller will be back from his hiatus of an episode, but we're starting without him because fuck him.
Yeah.
So,
harsh.
Right now, what we're gonna do, and the March to weekly begins. Next week we'll have something more of a regular episode, but this week we're just doing the second half of the game of the year, and we're gonna start off with Nathan offering a correction because of a game that he got recently that knocks off Cave Story DSiWare.
Yeah, I was unsure about Cave Story's status because I had yet to get both DKCR and Kirby. So for Christmas, I got both of them, and I ended up moving DKCR to number 3 in favor of Cave Story. It's awesome.
That's right.
It is awesome. The controls do
Booyah.
Not bother me at all. So I was surprised.
I'm still not sold on the motion controls, but I definitely got used to them. I'm 3 worlds in right now. I got it.
Right.
The other day, well, not really, I guess technically for Christmas because I got it with Christmas money, but it was post-Christmas.
Right.
And I'm really digging it a lot more than I thought I would. And it's really, it has to do with like the level design and like,
it's fantastic.
I just love watching Donkey Kong climb around on the grassy walls and stuff
that.
Like that.
The whole
really
game plays so smoothly. It's really tight and it's very old school looking and in design, but I'm so glad they make new games like this still. I mean, it feels better than New Super Mario Brothers. That kind of, there wasn't that much heart.
It looks better too.
Oh, it definitely does.
Yeah, it really does.
But
I know
it felt kind of like they just threw New Super Mario Brothers together, you know, for the Wii. And this is just fantastic.
There's a big backlash of people who think that the Donkey Kong Country games suck now. I think those people are crazy. Because I think it's, Donkey Kong Country 2 is one of my favorite games of all time. And what I love about Donkey Kong Country Returns is it totally recaptures that feel. You know, it's that classic Nintendo thing of recapturing the feeling of playing a classic game, but putting it into a new skin.
I think it's way better than the old ones, but that's more
too.
Because
I actually think it's better as well.
It's way better.
Yeah.
I just feel like the character's motion is so fluid. Like
it is. Yeah. That, I guess that's what I was trying to say when the game was really smooth. And there's so much visual spectacle to it. There's so much going on in the backgrounds, and the bosses are huge. Or, you know, not even the bosses.
Just, it's not even distracting, you know? Though. It's not like it's distracting. There's
it's not.
Going on. It's
no.
Just, it just completes the picture.
Yeah. It's very immersive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I love it.
And the motion controls bothered me for like literally no more than about 20 minutes. And
They bothered me for like half of the first world.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of got used to it, and I recognized the shortcomings. There's still times where I'm like, you fucking monkey, like, why won't you blow instead of just slap the ground?
which
And I feel like I feel like that would have been better if it was a button, but it's not. It's not like I'm pissed off and I'm going to go use Homebrew to use a class controller for the game.
Mm-hmm. What,
so
yeah,
I kind of like it.
I think maybe
what are you guys using?
I'm using the
just
Wii
Remote on
NES
side.
Yeah.
Both you guys using NES.
Yeah, but I think it's because I'm not too much of a collectibles guy, but I never do the blow move anyways, so I just kind of ignore it.
Yeah.
So
I usually just forget about it, but I've been trying to get all the Kong letters, and actually I've had a nice run of the past couple levels that I've done where I've gotten all the puzzle pieces, but it's more like I'll just explore, and I like exploring in this game. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say that I'll go back and, like, you know, try to get all the Kong letters and all the puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
And I might do the Kong letters just because there seems to be more of a tangible reward for that. But, I mean, I'm having fun exploring. Like,
absolutely.
The game seems to propel you through quite a few levels. I mean, I know you're only in the second world right now, or the third.
Third.
But it definitely, once you hit the fourth world, there are a lot more levels where you cannot explore. It's just full tilt, like the minecart levels and the rocket levels.
Sure.
And those get really
freaking
tricky.
I'm not too crazy. I only did the one rocket level, but I don't really like the way the controls as much, or at least I got used to it a little more by the end of the level, but it just seems a little, like, imprecise.
So neither of you have gotten to the factory level then, right?
No.
No, I've heard that's really awesome.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I really liked the rocket level with the bat. I thought that was freaking awesome. Just the way the bat was animated, it looked like a puppet or something.
Even the octopus, is that in the second world?
It's very similar, yeah, to the bat that I'm talking
about.
But
like how there's that octopus in the background, or the one where there's like the water keeps on like coming at the screen and you have to dodge it. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
It's just intense. It looks cool. It's just a very visually pleasing game.
And it's very subtle, like the jumping. You know, there are multiple degrees of jump, and I forgot that. And then I had to remember that.
Yeah, I had a lot of trouble on the first minecart level.
Exactly. You just have to lightly...
That same part right after the checkpoint where you need to do that jump to land on the...
Yes.
The one bad guy did.
And sure,
there are the crystals over it, and you forget that you can do the light jump. And I kept dying. I was like, what the hell is wrong with this game?
And sure, the game is pretty difficult. There's no denying that. But
it is,
they give you plenty of coins, so you can go stock up on lives whenever you want. So it's never really that big of a deal, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a really cool game.
I'm glad to hear you liked it, dude.
It didn't change my top three, but it's definitely, if I were to make a top five or a top ten, it might show up there.
I mean, I was even thinking in my head, like, does this make Mario Galaxy 2 feel a little less fresh to me? You know, maybe bump that down in my list, because it is less original than what DKCR is doing. Even though it is a rehash of Donkey Kong Country, it just feels, everything about it feels so fresh.
Dude, it's way fucking better than Donkey Kong.
It's so much better,
We will, I can guarantee that we will be talking about Donkey Kong Country 3 on this show sometime in the next month.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I kind of look forward to that just because I honestly don't have the fondest memories of it. And I replayed a lot of Donkey Kong Country 1 over the summer, and I just hated it.
Oh, yeah, see, I guess you're coming from the position that this is good at the expense of the other games. I really enjoy the other games, at least 1
like,
and 3.
No, I have okay memories of 2, but, like, I just had such a bad experience replaying 1 over the summer, where it was just like a lot of the way it was designed, it was just kind of like, I was like, really, Rare? What the fuck? Like, it's just a lot of like, kind of like, oh, fall here to get this bonus. It seems kind of random and haphazard, but I know people will definitely, like, you know, fucking martyr me here and be like, or not martyr, I mean, like, burn me in effigy by saying, like, oh, Rare made bad games.
But neither
or something,
of those made
but...
sense, Neil, by the way.
Yeah.
I kind of feel
crucify me. That's what I was trying to say. I'm tired, damn it.
I feel very much like Retro took what Rare was trying to do and they
made
put
it better.
More spirit into it than
I think
than
so.
Rare did.
Yeah.
That's what the game feels like. It just feels more alive to me than both Mario Galaxy 2 and the original Donkey Kong Country games. I just feel like this is the game that has the most life in it that I've played for Nintendo in a long time.
Yeah.
It makes me love Retro Studios that much more.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, like, it doesn't feel like Metroid Prime at all, but it feels like it's made with that same love and care.
And, you know, a lot of the world designs are very similar to the Metroid Prime games, like the snaking architecture of stuff, like the way they did all the trees looks a lot like some of the worlds in Prime. And that's a lot of what I liked about Prime, just like looking at the freaking worlds. So
that's the only thing.
This
I like
is a treat.
Team there.
Ooh,
yeah.
Strong words, Carl.
What
didn't like
no, I
to?
Said, I the yeah. The, looking at the worlds is pretty much the only thing I liked about the Prime games.
Yeah,
strong words.
Yeah,
but I'm still. A, I'm I've been meaning guy. To go back guy. And replay 2, just to see if I would like it, because I didn't really like it when it first came out. My favorite part about Metroid Prime 2 was the fucking multiplayer, and that was more because it's like, this is so stupid!
Really?
Let's play
because
more of it,
that
guys.
Was my least favorite part. I played it for like 5 seconds, and then I never played Metroid Prime 2 again.
Yeah.
Which is shallow, but, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do we want to start with the list, and hopefully by the time we get to the end of our first set of games, Zach will be here to give us his take.
So, Carl, kick us off with your... Number three.
Number three.
And
number
in
three.
That, number in three. That number three, we've got...
number
my,
three.
My first game is going to probably be come across as a little bit of a surprise to some people, but I got to say, there are three things that make Art of Balance on WiiWare one of the best things I played this year. For one thing, it's...
One,
a, it's
you
a,
talked about it on Newscast before.
One, A, it's on Newscast, which automatically makes it awesome. Two...
No,
part
no,
of
no,
a,
no. That's not true.
That,
Dear
that
Captor.
No, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome in its own way. But yeah, no, one, it's at a really easy price to get into. I mean, what is it? I think it's 800 points. So $8, easy to get into right there. Secondly, it's a game that you can play for 5 minutes or 2 hours. And if you don't know, it's basically, you know, you have to stack up different shaped blocks in a certain either shape or in a certain way that it won't fall over for a certain amount of time. It's sort of like a reverse Jenga, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Or instead of taking things
I played a lot of games like this on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. And what I really love about Art of Balance is that it's a game that is infinitely better for being played on the Wii. I would not even want to come
close. It's a rare thing.
I would not want to play this on a regular gamepad, period. It would lose everything that makes it great.
Is this played with the balance board or just motion controls?
Just motion controls on the Wii Remote.
So you couldn't do this with the 6-axis?
Maybe, but it wouldn't feel as good because the thing about with the Wii Remote is you're holding it in one hand and you're using the A button to kind of press down it. So it almost feels like you're holding it between your thumb and forefinger anyway. And so mm-hmm. it has a real like one-to-one, it feels real while you're doing it. And so I wouldn't want to use a regular gamepad. I wouldn't even really want to use it with something like an iPad or an iPhone either because, again, you don't have that tactile feel of holding it between your thumb and forefinger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is a game that is truly better for being played on Wii.
Oh, and, okay, cool.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you use it, basically like move the remote around and then you control some sort of object in 3D space in the game world and then you try to place things.
And you're dropping
balance.
It. Okay.
Correct. Yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
Dropping
See,
it.
See, I guess I had assumed because it was called Art of Balance, you would be doing some sort of tilting motion with the Wii Remote.
We all can't be Tetris Party guys.
I mean, yeah, and there are literally dozens of levels that you get so much bang for your buck, and it's a game that I've just continued to play. Even though I thought I'd only play it for like a half an hour just for that, you know, that site feature that we did where it was included, I've kept on playing it throughout the year, which, I mean, just made it really, really fun for me.
Nice.
Awesome.
That's
Art of Balance. How much does this game cost?
I believe it's 800 points, but I could be wrong.
I may have to pick this up.
I would highly recommend it.
It definitely seems really cool. I hope they come out with a demo.
Yeah, I think that would help them a lot. And this game sort of came out of nowhere. No one really talked about it at all, which kind of sucks.
Oh, well, wait a second. Shinen. Neil, is Fluidity 1200?
Yes.
Ooh, I'm in business. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But it's from Shinen Multimedia, I think that's the name of them. They also made Jet Rocket, which is supposed to be kind of like a cool 3D platform, 3D like character platformer.
It's
June.
It's a 3D platform. I played the demo for 15 minutes or so. It's
Yeah. It's I have the demo on my Wii dashboard. I haven't played it yet.
It kind of reminded me of something like Jack and Daxter, kind of.
I know a lot of people are going to hear that and think, you know, it's a WiiWare game, it's kind of a throwaway choice, but it really, really impressed me a lot. And I hope people can get over the fact that it might look a little generic from the outset, because I really had a lot of fun with it.
Right on.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
All right. Well, my number three.
Number three.
Number three.
Coming in at number three.
It definitely would be, after getting back into it this past week, it would be Dragon Quest IX would be my number three. But we talked about that before, and I feel like I've talked about that on the show a lot.
Uh-huh.
So instead, I'm going to talk about Bit Trip Runner, because while I think Fluidity definitely was another consideration for this, and I love Fluidity, Bit Trip Runner is just kind of something else. I just really love the way it, I mean, it's the fourth Bit Trip game. And it's kind of like a rhythm platformer, I guess, like think like Vib Ribbon or something like that, if you're unaware about it. But it's just the way it controls so simply. It's one of the only Bit Trip games that doesn't use anything special about the Wii, because you're hitting a button to jump, and then there's like, you know, you like duck under things or, you know, put up a shield and stuff like that.
Nice.
Or kick. You kick through walls as the little Commander Video,
right.
Like 8-bit guy. But it's just the way everything is. It's just like it's beautiful. Because how it all comes together, and it's not necessarily that like it's not like you're playing to the music, it's more like you are playing the music as you go through the levels. Like, I mean, there's another comparable game that I played that's on DSiWare called Maestro Green Groove, where it's the same kind of thing, except for in that one you're playing like
I like how you can just pull that out of your hat, by the way, Neil.
Yeah, well, I played too many DSiWare games, man.
Yeah.
But that was a game where like you played like I think like Mozart and shit like that.
Yeah.
And in this one, you're playing really cool chiptune music. And I mean, I would definitely say that the third area of this, there's three different worlds with like something like 12 levels and a boss in each. It's not a super long game, But the third world is kind of like, I would compare it to how probably some people feel about Area 5 and Rez for me, mm-hmm. just because I love the music in that level and I love the way it all comes together. And it's kind of hard. It's a hard as fuck game too, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, one hit and you're dead. But there's just such a good flow throughout it, because when you die, you get sent back to the start and there's no break.
So how exactly are you making the music in the game? Because I find that a lot of these games are more like, well, the music's there, but if you don't interact with the world correctly, it's missing.
Like, basically, it's like you'll have obstacles and you'll be kind of trained as you go through the game. I mean, it starts off very simple and then it gets more difficult, where it's like, you know, you jump over that, you duck underneath that, or like you kick this wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, those are all mapped to button presses. So it's really like you're just going between those buttons. And as you do that, like, the you know, like, musical notes happen in the level depending on, you know, when you jump, or there's even like where you can kind of extraneously jump and maybe like get a bonus, pick up a bonus thing, and then that will add different kinds of music to it. And by the end of the level, if you pick up all like the multiplier and bonus things, then, you know, the music will be fully formed, where if you don't get any of these power-ups, then it'll be kind of like missing
something. Okay, so yeah, so it's more like if you don't play right, the music's just missing, basically.
Yeah.
In the same way that you're not making music in a Rock Band game, or, you know, anything like that. There's no actual creative aspect.
No.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there's really the, it's very much like, yeah, I would say it's actually kind of comparable to Rock Band in that regard, because you are, you know, following the set path that makes music, not necessarily like you have wiggle room to do whatever the fuck you want.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, Neil, let me ask you a question. As someone who has not even tried any of the Bitrip games at all, ever, is this the one that I want?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carl, yes, I would say go try Bitrip Beat out on iOS.
I wouldn't,
it's like $2.
There's a demo of Bitrip Beat out there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Used to be.
There's a light version on the App Store, I believe.
Yeah.
So right, just go grab that.
I mean, I'll be completely honest. Like, I think Beat's like the second best Bitrip game.
I love Beat. Yeah, Beat's great.
I think Runner's on a different level. Okay. Runner's the best game those guys have done.
Well, but I think both of them are infuriatingly difficult after 5 minutes, so pick your poison, I suppose.
Oh, really?
I guess it's more of like, if you're into platformers, then Bitrip Runner is a no-brainer.
Oh, I love platformers, so...
See, with Beat, and it may be similar for Runner, I found that, like, it was difficult, but you could get into a, you know, sort of a zen-like state and just kind of push through the whole level, and that was really, really fun with Beat, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, and now Zach Miller is joining us. Say hi, Zach.
Oh, I see. You guys have already been doing the show.
Yes.
We started without you, Zach.
That's
probably
a good idea.
All you've missed so far is Art of Balance and Bitrip Runner. So now we're going to your
games.
We're going to your number three game, another downloadable game, and I think most of the people who go to this site can guess what it is. What is it, Zach?
It's Shantae Risky's Revenge. It's the best thing ever.
Then why isn't it your number one?
Obviously, it's not, because it's your number three, dude.
Yeah, I know. That's because I can beat it in less than 2 hours.
Mm.
But what about Super Metroid,
the more,
then, Zach?
Shut up. The more I've played Shantae,
that takes me
the
three.
More I realize it's built to be a speedrun game, and you get a different image at the end of the credits every time you get a better time.
Can I just say, Zach, that is the worst payoff for someone that knows the internet exists?
Shut up. Totally worth it, man.
I'm just gonna Google good ending. Shantae.
So yeah, was it worth the wait?
It was totally worth the wait.
Dude, worth the wait. That's a great game.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
It's if I had to change one thing about it, I'd say I wish Risky were in it more, because she's kind of the headline villain.
It does feel like it's kind of like I guess, like, not a full game.
Exactly.
It definitely.
I mean, it feels like a speedrun downloadable game now when I play it. Like, I know
I mean,
It's what it is. But I feel like it could be a lot more. Like, when you look back at previews from, like, 2 years ago or whatever, there's a lot of environments they didn't use. Like, a snow level and caves and stuff. And that probably just got all shuffled out when they had to go with, you know, not WiiWare or whatever they were going to do.
I guess my problem with Shantae was that the world didn't even feel like a world to me. Like, it was stapled together so unnaturally,
segmented.
And you had to go like through a wormhole to get to the other end, and there was no helpful map. And
yep,
ugh.
Right.
Like, no, I think it's a great game, and I had a lot of fun with it, but it does feel like the world's not cohesive.
No, exactly. The game does have problems. I think the game has problems where you can see where they cut stuff out. Mm-hmm. You can definitely see where they made it smaller for DSiWare.
Right.
Having said that, I think this is probably the best game for DSiWare.
Cave Story.
I agree.
And now, if they make a sequel, I would hope somebody lets them do it on a better platform.
Like 3DS?
Like 3DS?
Yeah, 3DS, hell yeah. And make it a retail game, for God's sake.
All right, cool.
But yeah, Shantae's a great game. The animation is wonderful. I can speed run through it in 2 hours now. Less than 2 hours, it's great. It's just a very, despite being kind of disjointed, it's a very refined game.
You're right. I think you could throw those animations and mechanics into a much, much better game.
You could.
Yeah.
A much longer, more cohesive game.
Full-featured game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, definitely. Shantae, and the animation, revenge. Just phenomenal.
You're right. But, you know, ultimately, it is a downloadable game. So for
yes.
what it is, you know, it's great.
Sweet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still love when you let her just stand there for 10 seconds. She adjusts her top. It's so funny.
You filthy... You dirty old man.
Zach, you have a wife. I mean, I just...
Dude,
okay.
Do you see... Have I sent you pictures of the stuff I collect? Shit.
I thought you meant... I thought you meant, dude, have you seen my wife?
I thought that was going down a different road. So, Carl, how about your number two?
Okay, my number two game is a game that I fell in love with upon playing it in San Francisco earlier this year. And that game is DJ Hero 2, available on almost every platform, it seems.
Did you have to go home after that?
Even Steam?
What was that question?
Did you have to go home after that?
Did I have to go home after that?
What? Never mind. I was going to make a Left Your Heart in San Francisco joke, but that was...
Wow.
Leave that one.
So,
Carl, kids who listen to this podcast,
you sucked from the Activision teat, and now this Activision game is your number two game of the year. What the fuck's up with that?
I'm just saying that if you put me up in the 27th floor of the W Hotel, I will like your game a lot.
Oh, shit, dude. Did you ever view the Golden Gate Bridge?
What's
I
that?
Had one of those before. It was shit.
Yeah, dude. I had a great view, and I had some great food, and I played a great game.
We should have had Carl review Tony Hawk Ride.
Yeah, except for I went to a swanky event for that, and that game still sucked. Like, yeah.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I'm the kind of guy that when people break out Rock Band, I'm just the person who wants to sing. I don't really like playing on the drums or guitar.
You know, I'm just the same way, actually, to be honest.
I don't really like that shit.
I fucking love the entire game.
I mean, look, I'm really psyched to play piano in Rock Band, but other than that, I'm not really that into playing, you know, with the plastic instruments.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, DJ Hero 2 just feels like a much more tactile involved experience. And
it really feels like you're like playing with the music, and it's the kind of game that I reviewed it and gave it, I think, a 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really dug it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the kind of game where I don't really want to challenge myself as much in it. Like, I'm just rocking medium, and I'm, you know, doing really well. But I just like experiencing the remixes and just fooling around with the songs.
I mean,
there's enough room on the turntable that you can snort coke off it, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's like when you activate Euphoria, which is like the star power, you can just like smoke a joint with one hand.
Smoking J's. All right, well, what I love about DJ Hero 2, and I feel like a lot of people don't give it a chance because they see it as just kind of like another Me Too music game, and it's really not. There's so much more room for improvisation than in, you know, Guitar Hero or Rock Band, except for maybe in some parts of, like, you know, maybe in the singing or in the piano bits. But you were talking about a game that is being released with tons of music that I don't like. It is just
that's always been my hang up more than anything else, is that I could care less about the soundtrack. I'm not into dance music.
The soundtrack is something that I would barely listen to, you know, were they separated. But for whatever reason, put them together, like just mash a bunch of these songs together, and they're awesome.
Oh my god, the soundtrack to
both
the first one and the second one are incredible.
Yeah, I like
Poison, hell yeah.
Dude, I love DJ Hero 2 for the same reason that I love albums by Girl Talk. which is that they mash up songs that I don't really like for the most part, but they make it interesting and epic and really involved. And it's just an experience that I treasure. And look, I don't think there was a better peripheral release in the last few years than that turntable controller.
It's definitely intimidating, but it just works so well.
Oh, it works so easily. When I was at the event, I mean, look, I'll dish on some video game journalists. A lot of people who went to that event didn't want to play the game. And I actually I had to coax a lot of people who were just hanging around, like taking notes of other people playing. And I'm like, play the fucking game. Come on. and cause it looks really, you know, sort of, what's the word? Intimidating from the outset.
Intimidating.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about it. Look, everyone can kind of, you know, put together in your head how you play a guitar or how you play drums or, you know, obviously how to sing and such. But the idea of a turntable with like all these buttons and you're spinning it while pressing buttons at the same time and your left and right hand are doing different things, it's sort of, you know, it sort of puts a lot of people off. But it is so intuitive and so easy to get into. I mean, literally one of the producers took me through the game and within 5 minutes I knew everything I needed to know to play the game.
And did then, you not play
the tutorials
first game?
In that game are really good too.
I did not play the first game, just because I was one of those people who was like, DJing, I'm not really into it. You know, I'm not really interested in DJing. I really don't like the soundtrack, and it sort of seems like another Me Too music game. And I was wrong on every single bit.
Yeah.
This game,
I picked up the first one. Second game, or is it the same?
No,
it's largely
the
same.
It's
the
exact same thing.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. I think they improved the durability of it a little bit, just to make it a little less easy to break. But
Has this started to go on sale for $20 like the last one yet, or is it still?
I don't think not yet. It's like I saw it for $50.
Yeah, it's doing. I think
like
it's doing marginally
of like
better than
90 this, or 100.
I think it's doing marginally better than the first game, but still probably not.
I don't
that
think
well.
It'll ever be a big seller just because it's so niche.
I think it sells enough though.
Yeah, well the thing is like they spent so much money coming up with the structure of the game. That, you know, designing the whole infrastructure, basically, that they're going to keep iterating on it just because to not do that would basically be cutting their losses.
Be a bigger waste of money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they can iterate on this with, you know, little to no effort for the next few
years.
It's
the same reason we saw a second version of Tony Hawk Ride.
Was this done?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
like,
Tony Hawk
we
Shred,
did?
I think. Yeah.
Shred. Isn't Shred geared towards kids, too?
Perhaps.
While we're talking about some inside gaming journalist poop, pretty much Activision
like
didn't send us a copy of Tony Hawk Shred, I think, because if you noticed, no one in like the gaming press reviewed it.
Yeah.
I don't think Activision sent out copies to anyone.
Yeah, no, they pulled what a lot of movie studios do, where they're like, it's not for critics. It's for the public.
Right.
Yeah.
It's for kids. Like, they made the second one geared for kids.
Nothing
like,
is
very,
for
very...
critics. That's a bullshit statement.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's the
I'm
same.
I'm not a critic.
Yeah.
Like,
go ahead.
I'm a douchebag that writes about video games. Like, I have no disillusions of what I do.
Right. So DJ Hero 2 for me is a game that... You know, when I left, they gave us a controller and a demo of the game, and I was one of the, I lined up, I didn't line up, but I bought the game, you know, relatively close to when it, I wouldn't line up for anything, but, I got it relatively close to when it came out, and it's a game that you can play for 5 minutes or for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I think, I think that's going to be a theme with a lot of the stuff that I bring up today, because I don't have time. That's sort of my big thing is that I don't have time to play like these really long, epic, you know, RPGs anymore.
Well,
I like a game that
too,
I can.
You're too busy recording like 200 podcasts a week.
I am so fucking busy. People don't realize this, but it's you know why don't you think I've
just
written
go to crosstalk.com.
crosstalk.com. Yeah, yeah. Anyway,
you know what? It's almost a sister site.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Oh God,
Zach is just sour because he's the only one who hasn't been on Crosstalk yet.
Carl only shows up when he wants to pimp his podcasts.
Please,
which is all the time.
If it weren't for me, half
so
you guys
anyway,
wouldn't be here.
Dude, DJ Hero 2 is pimp as fuck. Just end of story.
I want to play it. I actually really want to play it because I love the first game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now it's.
I'm kind of waiting to find an incredible Camp Pass deal on. the turntable, be it with the first or second game.
Dude, you can get it with.
Where were you for like the past 6 months?
I'm talking.
I got DJ Hero 1 for $20.
$20, yeah.
With the turntable?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
When?
Yeah,
where?
That's the only way.
Like at Toys R Us in like August?
I never saw it for less than 60 in stores.
Oh,
60
dude,
is not an incredible
go
deal.
On
are you blind?
Amazon, and it's so cheap.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I
like
use
legitimately?
The,
I think
I
if you walk into most stores,
game?
Yeah,
I might have
yeah.
to. I might have to lend it that.
If you walk into most stores right now, I think DJ Hero 2 is like at most $50.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't understand. I don't spend $50 on video games more than like
yeah.
once a year, and I,
right.
and I,
yeah,
I just
here.
Spend $40 on Red Dead, and so I can't just drop $50 right now.
I just
it has to be
good?
Like 20 or 30. The first 30 minutes are fantastic.
The rest of them are pretty good, too, until you get to the end, and then it's what the hell.
Okay. So
yeah,
it's like
my number two.
So speaking of almost regretting. Oh, okay, no, never mind. Go ahead, Neil.
My number two, number two, number two,
number two
game of the year is Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Wait, are we doing we already said the number two.
Number two.
Yeah.
Number,
yeah.
Number two.
Number two.
Number two. It's Kirby's Epic Yarn. I fucking love this game. Like, you can go back and listen to the episode aptly titled Neil Loves Kirby.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just was blown away by the visual style, by just the way the game controlled, how you interacted with the environment, how it seemed in like every level there was some kind of new wrinkle to the gameplay, whether it be a new transformation or a different look on a transformation or the shooter levels or like just like really clever level design with, I mean, not like really challenging, hard to find secrets, but like just with like, you know, little rewarding secrets to find pretty much
wherever you want. The gravity level was cool.
But see,
yeah,
Neil, no. I've been doing a little reading around the internet. And what I've been told is that real men don't play Kirby games.
Kirby is for babies.
Well,
it's true.
Is this accurate? Has the internet led me astray?
Last time I checked, I'm a man, and I love this game.
Neil has to check actually, because some you know sometimes
hold
it's
on.
Kind of ambiguous.
All right, yeah, still a man.
For those of you not aware, I'm referencing who wrote that article.
The Entertainment Weekly?
Doc
Jensen?
I think so.
Yeah. About how
yeah.
Kirby
is... I got
is,
that issue, too.
About how Kirby is for babies
thing.
Or whatever, so, yeah.
Yeah, he wrote a whole, like, reply blog post, because they had, in an issue of Entertainment Weekly, one of their worst games of the year was Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Yeah,
and
that
then
guy's
the
a
guy
moron.
who made that comment wrote a whole blog post on their website about how... you know, Kirby's childish and dumb, and everyone was just wowed by the visual style and hated
well,
the game.
Okay,
and like...
okay. To be fair, I didn't have quite the same reaction to his article that everyone else seemed to.
I didn't really give a fuck either.
The point he was trying to make was basically the game was being given a pass on its gameplay because everyone liked the visual style, and he felt that was such a big amount of bullshit that he felt compelled to make a point by putting it as the worst game of the year.
Yeah, but see, here's
the funny thing is with that is that, like, he at least as far as this reviewer's point of view, I really enjoyed the gameplay of Kirby's Epic Yarn. If it was all flash and nothing to back it up, then I wouldn't have liked it as
well,
much.
Well, the crux
now,
of his
Neil,
argument was...
I thought it backed it up.
I wouldn't say... Kirby's by far not the worst game of the year for me, but I would say that it's the worst Nintendo game I purchased in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean,
what?
I didn't buy it, but...
The crux of his argument was that video games have to be challenging, otherwise what are we doing playing them? If there's no challenge, what's
the
point?
That, I think that's bullshit as well. And I think
that is kind of a bullshit.
There's a lot of games that I play that I just play to relax.
You can just
have
fun. You don't have to be challenged.
Well, here's the deal for me.
I'm not saying I agree with him. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to make sure that his point isn't completely mystery. I kind of felt like in that email thread that we had going on, it was a little bit being shat on. He had a point whether or not you agree with his argument.
Well, yeah. The way I feel is that there isn't that challenge, and that kind of bothers me. But also, I'm just not having fun.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's the issue.
I mean, if that's how you feel about it, that's how you feel about it.
But
I know from my end, I really, like, from start to finish for the 10 hours I put into that game, I loved it.
Were you
and
smiling
yeah, you
ear
definitely
ear.
Justified that in
pretty
your
much.
Review. You know, I get why you like it.
Yeah,
right.
It's just none of those things really appeal to me.
But see, Nate, the reason that you don't like Kirby, or at least Epic Yarn, is that you didn't like it. the reason that this guy doesn't like Kirby's Epic Yarn is because everyone else likes it.
Yeah,
right. I didn't get that from his blog post.
I did.
That's what
It was pretty self-righteous, and
I'll give you that. It was definitely very self-righteous, but I didn't get a "this is popular,
like
fuck
the,
it" vibe from it. Which
I like the part where he was talking about how his kid liked the game. And then he told his kid he was wrong, and then his kid got pissed off at him.
I would.
Part of the blog post.
He was pretty self-depreciating about that, though. He wasn't being a dick about that. He was basically saying, clearly the game has an appeal to its target market.
Yeah.
That was his point. No, I'm pretty sensitive to the "it's popular, fuck it" vibe. I hate that shit, and I didn't get that at all from that article. I really didn't.
Right.
Can we agree to fuck Twilight?
Sure, if you want.
Sure. All right. Well, that's because it's horrible, anyways.
Who wants to fuck Twilight now? What?
No.
Zach, he likes the main character.
Oh, Team Edward, is that what
he calls him Twilight? But you know, he's got some real name. But Zach wants to do him.
Here's the thing. Well, the thing about Epic Yarn, though. For me, I beat the whole game. I got all the levels done, all the fabrics, all the stupid little mini games, and I wish I hadn't done the mini games. But even when I was playing the single-player mode, I feel like they could have chopped off a whole world, and I wouldn't really have cared.
I don't.
Because the gameplay does get old for me. Like, there's only so much straight platforming you can do. And that's what a lot of the game is. I mean, it's great that there's moving platforms, and some of the levels are scrolling, and there's little... You know, you're riding on a dinosaur's head, a yarn dinosaur, which is awesome, but you know, it's not, you're never faced with something so different that it makes you rethink how you play the game. I'm sorry, that's just how I feel.
Or I guess maybe not rethink how you play the game, but definitely each world stood alone by itself as, kind of like a strong, like this is different than what came before it. Not like, I guess, gameplay-wise, not necessarily. I mean, definitely the transformations change it up, and there's some other, like the shooter level,
right.
I keep on mentioning the two of those.
Right. Does the game ever speed
something
up?
That doesn't...
No, never.
No, not really. Okay, now that I think about it, when Zach was talking, I guess one of the things that really bugs me is just how slow the game is, and how the whole thing sort of crawls along so that you can experience all the little... Oh, the zipper is coming undone, and you know, you just pull the button, and the piano music is like Charlie Brown music. And
right. You know. No, I actually love the soundtrack. That's my favorite part of the game. Not even the visuals. I love the soundtrack more.
The soundtrack's great too. I mean, Zach, you've definitely gotten to this level. I don't think anyone else has played it that far. But there's, I think it's in World 4. There's that one, the music level. Where, as you go through the level, you, hit keys, and then the music plays, and, you basically, hit notes off of the piano, and then you go collect the notes, and it's,
that is the most imaginative level in the game.
It's so cool.
And I wish there was more like that, because the way, when you're unzipping something, great, you're kind of affecting the environment, but you're really just creating a new platform. But in that music level, your play style affects the level. And that's what's awesome, and that's why I love that level so much. Whereas the rest of the game,
that's a great
level.
All
the quilt and the fabric and whatever else is just eye candy, and it's pretty eye candy, but it's that music level that really gets it right, and I wish there was more like that.
And I really enjoyed, spoiler alert, come back in a minute, but
I can't go anywhere.
King Dedede's in it, oh God.
Do you guys care if I spoil it at all?
How bad is this?
I really don't.
It's what the last world is.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, the last world is great. It is fantastic.
The last world is Dreamland. You go to Dreamland, that's awesome. And the levels are very reminiscent of the original level. It's been three months since I played the game, but the music is very reminiscent of the original games, to the point where it's remixes of it in the style of music that's done in Kirby's Epic Yarn. And the first level just basically reminds me of the first level of Kirby.
Yeah.
You fight the
apple
tree?
If it's exactly the same. You do fight the apple tree.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah, no, that
like,
first, that
I wish there was a way,
great.
I wish there was a way, Nate, that you could just play that level and not play the rest
right
of the game.
Well, see,
that.
I guess
you
in
really
general,
enjoy that
I
level.
Love Kirby, and that's why you talking about the last level gets me excited. So I was doubly disappointed with just how, I guess Kirby's never really been a fast game.
Well, Kirby's never really been a complicated game either. The most complicated Kirby game was the Nintendo 64 one where he could combine powers.
An underrated game, personally.
Yeah, it was good. I think the best one was Kirby's Dream Land 2.
Oh, for the Game Boy?
I never played it.
Yeah.
Or, yes, I love that. Great. I love that game. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Okay, the one Game Boy. I was thinking, Dream Land 3 is the only one that came out on. That was the Super Nintendo one, right?
Yeah, I got that. And it has a very pastel look to it, too.
I played some of that at TYP's house at E3 and kind of enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
I think for a while now, kind of under the radar, Kirby's been experimenting with its graphical style.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Which is great. And I really like this. I think the yarn thing, that could only work with Kirby. I don't think it could work with, like, a Yoshi's Island. We all want them to make a Yoshi's Island. And I really think they should, but I don't think they should go with yarn.
But they won't.
I don't think they'll rehash the yarn. I think they could have done it with Yoshi, but I don't think they're going to redo that style.
No, I hope they
Yoshi's
don't.
Epic Yarn.
Yoshi's Epic
Yarn.
Epic Yarn, yeah.
That would be the worst trend in video games. I guess outside of Tony Hawk.
Yarn is the new cell
Tony Hawk Yarn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Tony Hawk Yarn. I think that's a good good time to move on to
Zach's along a string.
Zach's number two.
My number two, yeah, Picross 3D, and it's a surprise pick because I only picked it up right before I got on the plane to Hawaii.
Ooh.
It's my plane.
Yeah,
game.
How'd you like it?
Oh my God, I can't put it down.
I love Picross 3D.
I
seriously
can't.
It now.
Are we
it's
doing
like
your
a
my
singer.
number one is Picross 3D.
Oh shit!
So I'll just talk about it with Zach right now and skip my turn next time.
And
but,
you know what's so great about it is that it's first off it's easy to learn, really easy to learn. And once you really get the hang of it, once you start like learning little things like there's six blocks, but I only need to keep five, so you mark the middle ones or whatever. Once you start to get into that mindset, it's really hard to stop playing.
Yeah.
Had you played the previous Picross game?
What?
Had you played Picross DS before?
No.
Okay.
I've never
played
a Picross game before.
I picked up Picross DS after... Well, because basically my story with Picross 3D is that I got it when it came out. Lauren, Jared, and I... Or I think it was just Lauren and I went to Nintendo's New York headquarters to play like Galaxy 2, Sin and Punishment 2, and Picross 3D. And at this point, I don't think we'd really played it that much. I think Lauren played it a little bit of PAX East. But we played it then, and both of us got really hooked on it. So the day it came out, I got it, and then basically Lauren and I proceeded to fight over the game for the next month as like we had finals in college. It was the end of our last semester at college, and like basically it'd be like one of us would be working on a paper while the other one would be playing Picross 3D. The person working on the paper would just hate the other person. And like it was like she stole it from my DS, I stole it from hers, it got bad.
I love that game
so much. Yeah, never got that bad. Usually I just cave in and be like, yeah, I'll play something else. Play some Pokemon. But I mean, I probably put 25 hours into that game, played everything I could, and Lauren outside of me put easily double that, and she's still playing it to this day, and it's ridiculous.
Well, I'm in the middle of the medium puzzles, and what's so detrimental about this game is because each puzzle only takes like 5 to 7 minutes when you get good at it, you can just keep playing.
Yeah.
You're like, I can do another one in about 5 minutes. Meanwhile, the movie ended that you were watching in the background, and you're still playing the game.
Yeah, that's what I would do a lot. Like, I'd throw on a movie or something and play Picross 3D, and then I'd be playing it for, like, you know, a half an hour after the movie and be like, the movie ended. Shit.
Yeah, yeah. And I just did a Velociraptor on the plane back. I was like, well, this game's number two.
Yeah. Dude, you have to, you got to download some of the puzzles because there's one that's
I did. I downloaded all of them on the day I got the game because I didn't know how quickly I'd get through the puzzles.
Awesome.
There's tons of puzzles. There's like 500 when all is said and done. Yeah.
Sweet.
Shit.
But I love Picross 3D.
All our listeners, if you haven't played Picross 3D, you should go buy it right now.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, It's like crack, but
you'll never set your DS down again.
Pikrak 3D.
There better be a Picross 3DS.
That would be mind blowing.
It would indeed.
Like, I want that dog that I make to jump at me. He don't gotta lick my face like in Nintendogs. Like he just has to jump at me.
Sweet.
Nintendogs. Oh man.
Okay, guys. It's been fun. Before we start with Carl, I'm going to step out permanently for this podcast and say goodbye.
Mustafa is dead.
Yes, he is. All right. Adios, all right, guys.
Later, see you, Nathan.
Right. Bye, sir.
Bye, Nate.
Later.
See you next week when we go weekly.
Weekly.
Whoa.
What day is that going to be? All right.
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Right. Yes. Good.
All right, Carl.
Number one. The best game that I played on a Nintendo system this year is No More Heroes 2 Desperate Struggle. And maybe that's not such a surprise for people.
Oh, Jesus Christ. How is it not Killer 7? Did you play Killer 7 this year?
I actually did replay Killer 7 this year before I played No More Heroes 2 to kind of get myself in that mood. Go ahead.
I have a question for you, actually. I've played the first No More Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it. I really had a good time with it. Mm-hmm. What I found was that the game was really enjoyable story-wise right up until the end when, for the last 3% of the story, nothing made any sense at all. And I got the clear vibe that it was parodying video games in general.
Well, I can explain to you the last part of the game off mic if you want. But
I guess my question is, does any of that shit that I almost was able to make sense of at the very end matter in the sequel?
Absolutely not. In fact, they disregard almost all of that.
Fantastic.
Wow. No More Heroes 2 basically picks up with what's his name? Travis getting a call from the Assassin's organization.
The girl.
Hey, get back in. And now he has to climb back up from not from 11, but from 100. And so, he kind of has to really work his way back up the ladder. The best thing about No More Heroes 2 is that it is an infinitely better game. They addressed a lot of the really key problems with the first game. For one, they just got rid of the overworld. Got rid of it. There's no more driving around in Sand to Destroy. Now you just pick the location you want to go to from a little mini map, and that's where you go. There's none of that anymore. The whole idea of buying your way into boss battles by doing all of the inane tasks, that's just gone.
Awesome.
They replace all of the really stupid minigames with NES style minigames. So they're all there's the flip a pancake minigame, but it's all in this really awesome 2D NES style graphic style. It's really, really cool. Some of the games are genuinely fun. There's the coconut.
Like WarioWare?
Oh, yeah. It's very much like WarioWare, really quick games. There's a coconut grabber game where you catch coconuts in a basket that is legitimately fun to play on its own. There's some really, nice. Really cool things in this game. And yeah, you can just go from boss battle to boss battle if you want. The only thing you can use your money on is buying better swords. And then you can, and then obviously all of the stupid accessory shit if you're into that kind of thing. But yeah, the game's story, I feel takes a little bit of a dive. I think the first game had a better story.
Game's story was insane though.
Yeah, but that's kind of what I like about it. That's what I like about Suda 51 games. This one is a little bit more, grounded,
is
I guess. It's not
more serious.
It's not really. It's actually really, really kind of silly in a lot of parts. But it's not at. It's more of a non-issue in this game. The story is sort of second to the gameplay. Whereas, as Grasshopper makes more games, their games become better in the gameplay sense, and the stories take more and more of a backseat. So if you were to compare, go ahead.
How does this make the gameplay better? Because I found that No More Heroes 1 got really repetitive as it got near the end of the game.
Well, it is still really repetitive, And there is actually one area that's where it's worse than the first No More Heroes, in that they changed one of the dynamics of the battle system, where in the first game, your stance was really, really important, whether you were holding a high or a low stance. In the second game, it doesn't really seem to matter. So that, in that sense, I was sort of disappointed by it. But they did add classic controller support, which makes the game actually a lot faster. You can pull off moves a lot easier, and it makes the game more of a, it just makes the game quicker, basically. I still, for the most part, played it with the nunchuck and Wii Remote style, just because that's what I was used to, but, the classic controller support was actually really good. Like, it wasn't half-hearted, it was implemented really well. And maybe that's why the stance thing didn't matter as much, because it's kind of more difficult to do that with the classic controller. So maybe that's why they changed it. But yeah,
is the game still funny? Because that was one of the things.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's totally goofy and silly.
Do they still have like the Captain Falcon esque boss and the?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
or at least do they have like those kind of things throughout it?
Yeah, I don't really want to spoil them because they're so good. I mean, the best thing about the first No More Heroes were the boss battles, and that is totally the case with the second game as well.
Is that basically like the majority of the game, or are there still those little shitty levels before?
There are still some of those, like, beat up all the random dudes who all look alike. There is some of that. But the vast majority of the game is like boss battles.
Cool.
Which,
can you give us an example of like one that
is awesome?
You remember?
Okay, yeah. There is one. It's really, really early in the game, so maybe this isn't such a huge spoiler, but you go, you meet up with, you're supposed to defeat like this football player, and you fight his army of cheerleader assassins, and then you fight him in a giant Gundam. And it becomes a 2D fighting game. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So as opposed to man-sized Gundams?
No, it's like giant Gundams.
Yeah.
Yes, as opposed to, you know, the Gundams that you could shake their hand. Yes. As opposed to tiny Gundams, they are large Gundams.
Right. No, I'm just being an ass.
And by the way, Zach, there were man-sized Gundams, so there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, so take that shit, you signed asshole.
Damn it! You dropped the science on me, boy.
Dropping some science.
No, I got this game recently. In a trade from another staffer, Mr. James Carlton, we traded a game. I traded this for Boom Blocks,
mm-hmm.
And I've kind of had it sitting in my drawer. Mm-hmm. Haven't put it in yet, but I did really enjoy the first one. I thought the first one was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got the impression with the overworld map in particular, it was, and the story later on, like it was to me, and the phrase "Santa destroyed" just in general to me, it was very much a parody of like Western culture and video games in general.
Well, if you would ask Suda51, he would probably say that it's a glorification of those things.
Sure,
but maybe that means the same thing. I don't know.
He's Tarantinoing it up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yep.
So like, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I enjoyed the first one, and I'm. It was very weird to me to even see a sequel at all, because it kind of felt like to me he was making a statement with the first one,
mm-hmm.
and that statement has now been made.
Well, the statement. So, well, clearly the statement that people made was that they're willing to buy his games, because No More Heroes, the first one actually sold relatively well. The second one not so much, but hopefully we will get a third one on the successor on Wii HD or whatever. And
hasn't Suda said he's done developing for?
He's done for with No More Heroes on Wii. He didn't, but he said he would be open to making one on another console.
Gotcha.
And to me, it seems like a pitch perfect launch game for Wii HD. It would make a lot of sense, but that's just
or whatever the successor is.
Or Wii 2 or whatever you want to call it. So.
And for the record, during your talking about the game, I just added it to my GooseX.
I mean, obviously, so, you know,
you sold me, sir.
Some people would say that I can't be trusted when it comes to Grasshopper games, and maybe that's true, but I enjoyed the hell out of it, so that's just me.
Yeah. I want to play it at some point.
Yeah.
Seems fun.
Mm-hmm. I tried and could not get into to Killer 7, but...
Here's the thing. Killer 7 is palatable to maybe four people, of which I am one.
Staffer Grant Buell, who was on the show last week, he actually is a big fan of Killer 7.
I love Killer 7 for all the wrong reasons, but No More Heroes 2 is a much better game than Killer 7, even though I still have that soft spot in my heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we already went over my number one, which was Picross 3D. Now, I feel like now I have nothing special to add here because we already talked about
it. You blew your load there, Neil.
So,
Kapow!
Zach,
yes.
What's your number one?
Number one.
Number one.
It's It's a game I recently picked back up and can't stop playing again.
I think it's
Dragon
one
Quest
I recently
9
picked.
For the DS, bitches. Oh,
that again? Ugh.
I know.
Can we just not talk about it? Like, I am tired of being bombarded with Dragon Quest 9.
That makes for a very anticlimactic
that's
show.
Why you, that's because you haven't played it, sir.
Do we have anything else we want to talk about?
Well, no. we had the post-game.
Yeah, post-game stuff.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing about Dragon Quest 9, though?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. You weren't here. Yeah, Zach, you weren't here last week. You can take your time. Talk about it as much as you want.
Fuck you all. while we were in Hawaii, I picked it back up, and I decided to get through the kind of world-opening quest that you get after you beat the game. Yeah. And it requires alchemizing some pretty rare stuff. You can either alchemize it or buy it, but it would easily take as long, if not longer, to save up the money to buy it than actually alchemize it. So it took a few hours, but I did it. And what happens is you get access to the Starlight Express. Like, you fly it around like you would an airship, and you land wherever the fuck you want. And there's, like, suddenly the size of the world doubles because you can land on mountaintops that you couldn't have access to before.
And oh, shit.
My mind was blown. Like, oh, my gosh, there's so much more to this game. Mm-hmm. And there are, like, so many more quests now. And you get I got a ton more alchemy recipes. And just, holy shit. Like, if you haven't had enough of Dragon Quest IX after you beat it, do this quest. You won't regret it. It's so insane.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean,
awesome.
I might go and do that at some point, because I started picking it back up, because basically what happened with me in Dragon Quest IX was that I reviewed it, so that means I put about, I don't know, 30 to 40 hours into it in about, like, 5 days.
Right.
So you got sick of it, yeah.
So I got really burnt out on it quickly, and so I haven't really touched it since July, and only recently I started playing it again, and man, it's just so much fun just bombing around that world.
Yeah, definitely go back to it. The only downside to these new quests is that a lot of them require going into grottos. And you know, we don't really have a commuter culture, so we don't have a lot of grotto maps up here. But you know, you get them slowly. As you beat one grotto, you open up another one.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, Dragon Quest IX. So that just about does it for this week's episode of NWR Newscast.
Short.
Coming up after we conclude this, we will go with our post game in which Carl, Zach, and I will each talk about a game for another system that we really love.
A non-Nintendo
game,
if you will.
This year.
Yes, a non-Nintendo game.
A non-Nintendo.
Non-Tendo.
Brilliant.
Mm.
Yes.
So follow us on Twitter. Twitter.com/NWRNewscast. Email us at newscast@NintendoWorldReport.com.
Yes, yes.
Hit up the talkback thread. Tell us we were awesome, or tell us we sucked. Just pick a side, goddammit.
You have to, or else.
And we'll be back next week, and we can say that genuinely and actually mean it, and not just being mistaken.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, because going forward here, in case you missed it, we're going weekly. Next week, we're going to have a quarter one preview show, and we're also going to go over some news, because pretty much all the news recently actually has to do with the first quarter and the releases.
You know,
so
you know
that's
what
we're
going to
do.
Pokemon.
Dragon Quest VI, Pokemon, Mario Sports Mix. And then we're basically, the format, in case you missed it, we're going to do every other episode. Basically, every other episode will be a regular episode, and then between will be something different. And we're going to have a quarter one preview. We're going to do something on Donkey Kong Country 3. We're going to have something on Star Fox Assault eventually. I'll be talking about that 3DS event in a couple weeks, like pretty much the day after I go
to
it. So we got cool shit on the horizon, guys, and we're coming at you every week starting now.
Mm-hmm.
So
coming
till
through
next
your
time.
Ears.
And Carl, you got anything to say?
Oh, well, you know. as usual,
Carl's not much of a talker, so
yeah. I mean, look, at this point, if you don't know, I do have my little side project, crosstalk.com, which is spelled crosstawk.com. It's not LK. A lot of people make that mistake, because I do see what people Google that takes them to our website, and they always spell it crosstalk like with the regular spelling, which is annoying. Anyway, we have tons and tons of alternative podcasts at crosstalk.com. The one rule that we have at Crosstalk is no video games. That's pretty much the rule. So we have a music...
Because most of the people are tied to Nintendo World Report.
Exactly. I mean, we've had Andy and Nate on Discovery Music Project, which is hosted by Jonathan Metz.
Good times.
Neil is going to be joining me on an upcoming episode of Crosstalk Comics.
When are we doing that?
Oh, nice.
We'll talk about that off mic. Maybe Zach, I can drag him on to an episode of Crosstalk Dinosaurs.
Hey, or we could watch Jurassic Park for the movie one.
Or for the movie one, exactly. Which is of course Box Office Poison, our flagship podcast.
Box Office Poison.
Our flagship podcast. So yeah, go on over to crosstalk.com and check it out. I think you'll enjoy it.
And I really have to say, because I feel like this is one that doesn't get mentioned enough, but I've really been digging Crosstalk Comics. It is an honor to be on the fourth, fifth episode of it or whatever.
Sixth, I
really like the other.
Yeah.
I really like the other ones because, I mean, like the stuff like the Ages and the Jean Grey stuff, it's kind of things that I kind of know because I'm kind of into comics.
Right.
But it was just nice to like hear it again or hear it clarified in some humorous fashion. And I really like Crosstalk Comics. So.
And it's going to be awesome.
Listen to that, guys.
I hear that the third, I don't know for sure, but I heard that the third X-Men movie totally fucked up the Jean Grey Dark Phoenix thing.
It's pretty scary, but I mean,
new canon or new format, new canon.
Whatever.
Format, new canon.
You know, if actually, I mean, not that like the people who listen to that, I mean, maybe they're listening here, but
sure they
if
are.
If you want to like see kind of a good adaptation of the Jean Grey, like the Phoenix and the Dark Phoenix saga, watch that old X-Men cartoon show.
Oh,
the 90s show. Yeah.
It's all on DVD now.
Yeah, the art style is lifted almost directly from Chris Claremont's penciling style and Jim Lee's. It wasn't Chris Claremont. He wasn't an artist. He was a writer. It's lifted a lot from Jim Lee's art style. And the cartoon is very, very corny at times and a little bit overwrought.
Tin Woodsman, I'm sending you back to Oz.
Yeah, but I mean, look, so was the X-Men comic at the time. So I guess, you know, it fits. And yeah, they did get it very much correctly. It's almost like a frame for frame remake.
Yeah, it's pretty. I love that show.
Yeah,
a lot.
It's very cool.
Spider-Man cartoon was good too.
Oh well, there have been plenty of good Spider-Man cartoons actually.
Dude, Spectacular Spider-Man. I've just been watching.
Is
that
the newest one?
Awesome. Yeah.
But isn't that like Batman Brave and the Bold kind of thing?
No, dude, it's so good.
It's actually
like
pretty good.
I kind of just watched it because I was like, yeah, this is on Instant. I heard from some people it was good.
Oh, it's on Instant. The first season of it. If it's on Instant,
the first season of it is.
I'll watch anything on Netflix.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, and
I haven't watched the second season because it's not on Netflix.
Well,
but...
speaking of cartoons, the episode or episodes, I should say, that Neil is going to be on for Crosstalk Comics are going to be all about the DC animated universe.
Oh fuck! I want to be on that. Oh shit!
So look forward to that coming soon. Probably at the end of January. Look for that then.
The only series I haven't watched is Superman. Fuck.
Superman might be the it's close to the best one, but we'll talk about it off mic.
No, nothing tops Batman.
Okay,
nothing
tops. Some of those
I've
been rewatching
Justice League Unlimited. Yes. Justice League Unlimited.
Justice League Unlimited season 1 is the best thing that the DCAU produced.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was insane.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about video games anymore.
Nope.
So hi everybody.
Stay tuned, y'all.
Tuned for post game. We'll be talking about
Happy
some
New
games.
Year.
If this is the kind of thing you enjoy, check out crosstalk.com.
All right. Bye everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so it's Neil, and we're doing post-game, and post-game is where Carl, Zach, and I will talk about three Nintendo games that we really like this year, and Andy will just hang out and bounce ideas.
Neil, this is post-game content?
Yes.
So we can go back through the podcast freely now and find all the rest of the items and shit?
Oh, touche, sir.
Bazinga.
All right. I don't get that
Let's
reference.
Let's not waste Metroid.
No wonder.
So let's just jump right in with Carl. And you got two games that you're going to talk about.
Bonus. Anyway, mine is a co-pick, but the first game that I really want to talk about is Comic Jumper on Xbox Live Arcade. Many people might not know this, but I'm a huge XBLA junkie. Like, I am so into that platform.
It's a wonderful service.
Actually, my game of the year last year was a game from Twisted Pixel called Splosion Man.
Heard about that.
I'm so pissed. I missed the sale on Black Friday.
Yeah, it was $1.
I was so pissed because I don't really have a lot of money right now. So it's like, I want to play Splosion Man, but I don't really feel like spending that much money on it. I was like, $1, I'll totally get it. And then I got back.
Well, it's only $5 now. It's still pretty cheap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It is just $5 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll get it.
Yeah.
God, I need an Xbox.
Oh, it's so good, dude. Splosion Man for me was one of the most... Look, all you do is literally you move with the analog stick and you press any of the face buttons to explode, and that is the entire control scheme. And what they're
It's like brilliant in how it. I mean, I played the crap out of the demo of that game, and really, just the way it like kind of maneuvers around the levels is mm-hmm. just really clever. It's part of the reason why I like Bitrip Runner a lot is because it's a simple premise, and they do really creative things with it.
It gets insanely difficult in the later levels, and I think if Johnny Metz was here and he was talking about it, he would tell you that the game gets way too repetitive and way too hard. But he's just a pussy, if you ask me.
He did beat the guy level or the kid levels in Super Meat Boy. Like that shit's hard, man.
Whatever. He just can't put up with it. Explosion Man is awesome, and I highly recommend you play that. But the follow up by Twisted Pixel this year was a game called Comic Jumper, and it really feels like Twisted Pixel is just making games for me because it combines Contra, Infinite Lives, and comic books. And anyone who knows me knows that I'm a huge comic book fan. I'm a huge nerd in that regard. And so the game is basically this. You play as Captain Smiley. You're the star of a comic book, self-titled. That comic book has no sales. It gets canceled. So Captain Smiley has to guest star in other comic books to kind of raise his buzz level so that he can get his own title back. So the first thing he does, he goes into and also in each... level, the art style changes based on what kind of genre you're in. So the first world, I should say, is in this comic book called Nanok of the North, and it's sort of like a Conan the Barbarian kind of game. So you're like in a loincloth, and it's like a really realistic style, and you're like, everyone looks like they're out of a Frazetta painting. But you're firing coconut shells instead of your usual bullets, and you have to ride around and there's go-karts that you're going through. It's just it constantly switches between a 2D plane where it's a lot like Contra and such and like a beat 'em up, sort of like Streets of Rage, and then it also will shift occasionally into 3D, or I should say more of a third person kind of action game where you're sort of doing target practice. In that regard, it's sort of like Sin and Punishment. It's very similar in that kind of respect, and it's very difficult and it can be very frustrating. But again, you have infinite lives, and the respawn areas are pretty forgiving, so you don't really lose that much ground when you die. So it's really not that bad. It's a $15 game, which I get, might be steep for some people, but I'd say it takes about 6 hours to beat. So I think that's pretty decent.
That's a good value. Yeah.
I think that's a pretty decent value. The second world is my favorite, and it's the Silver Age influence world where it's Captain Smiley starring in Origami Kid and Captain Sushi. It's like a totally racist Asian stereotype comic, and it's everything's like 60s inspired. So the villainess of the level is women's lib, and she talks about how the men keep her down, but all of the guards are like, hush up, sweetie, don't you need to make a pie? It's awesome. It is so funny and so much
fun. You just love objectifying women, Carl.
It's my favorite thing, as anyone who knows me would know. And then in the third level, it's a manga-inspired level, and I hate manga, and it was awesome to see them make fun of it.
Because doesn't it scroll right to left?
Yeah, it scrolls right to left instead of left to right, which is really, which is really funny. And Captain Smiley looks like Cloud, and he's got like a huge Buster sword. And you fight demon fairy girls who have little lolly faces. It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's awesome. Like I said, it's a little bit difficult, but if you can get around that bit, if you are a good player at Contra, you'll have no problem with this game. And nice. it's inventive, it's very funny, and it can get a little bit repetitive in that you're pretty much always, you know, shooting or bashing in some respect. But for a six-hour game, I felt like it never got too tiresome, and with the setting changing so often and in such radical ways, it still kept me really, 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 really interested, and I liked it a lot. And then really, yeah. really quickly, I want to mention Bejeweled 3, which I've only been playing for like a week. I think PopCap is one of the most talented developers in the world, like, period.
I agree. I mean, they make Plants vs. Zombies, Peggle, Zuma, Bejeweled.
Yeah, and so the newest version of Bejeweled just came out. I think it came out like about a month ago. It's only available right now on Mac and PC. It's going to be coming out on iPhone and Android, you know, later on next year. And it's the best version of Bejeweled yet. You know, it's more of matching, but they've added tons of new modes, special moves. Depending on what kind of matching you set up, it can have different effects. There's a new Zen mode where it like uses the microphone and video camera to like suit the level to like relax you. It's so cool and so inventive, and they're always looking for new ways to make the game fun, and they have not failed in any respect. I can't imagine a world where you wouldn't want to play Bejeweled. So, pick it up.
Yeah.
Right on. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so I will talk about my Nintendo game of the year that is, well, actually was going to be a Nintendo game, and now it might not.
Yeah.
Super Meat Boy for Xbox Live Arcade. So it's also angry. Available on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the Steam version, I hear is kind of buggy. But
I've heard
anyway,
well.
XBLA, this game is amazing. If you like platformers, if you like Super Mario Brothers, stuff like that, then you should get this game any way you can. I think it's on sale on Steam. It's on sale on XBLA right now. It's normally $15. I think it's down to $10, and I think it might be like $7.50 on Steam right now.
Well,
I bought it on Steam for $3.75, but.
Yeah, it was cheaper on Steam.
I'm kind of like waiting for it to be Mac native before I put time into it, because right now it doesn't run very well on my Windows laptop. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'll need a game controller.
Yeah, you do.
You see, I thought I had read somewhere that you have to use the Xbox 360 controller on Windows right now for the Steam version. They don't have other controller support.
Oh, really?
I don't know how true that is. I read that on their blog. It might have been an old post, or I might not have even read it properly.
That can't be accurate. That sounds really weird.
That seems weird to me, too. That's why I take that with a grain of salt.
Okay,
yeah, but Super Meat Boy, Super Meat Boy is like really, really awesome. You control this little boy who doesn't have any skin and he's just meat, and you walk around these levels. Like they start off kind of simple in scope, where you're just running and jumping around. There's a run button, and if you run and you jump, then you know you go farther. If you wall jump, you get like you can get more air by wall jumping. There's one level in particular where it seems impossible at first, and you realize that you need to wall jump on this little tiny area to make the jump, and it's kind of crazy. But yeah, and you die a lot in this game. It's like Bit Trip Runner, where it keeps on moving. Like when you die, you just restart. Like there's really like it's almost instantaneous, and you
That's
just keep
awesome.
On going until you beat the level, and the level is Reaching Bandage Girl, who you're trying to save from Dr. Fetus.
Nice.
That's really cool.
And when you beat the level, too, then you have all the little meat boys that died trying to, you know, get to the end. You'll see them all, like, repeat, and you'll follow the one that actually made it to the end. So that's really fun. There's, I think, 6 worlds plus downloadable ones that they're adding. Like, I think they have planned to add, like, something like 100 or so more levels by early next year.
Jeez.
It
seems like a game that would be very easy to make, like, bonus packs for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're doing. They're throwing together, like, 20-level packs. Mm. And the other thing that they're making bonus packs with this, too, is that they have these warp zones. That some of them they all take you to kind of, like, retro-style levels. There's ones that are, like, styled off a Game Boy, ones that look like they're, like, styled off a Genesis, and they change the graphical style of the game, and they're all single-screen instead of the, you know, the other ones kind of, like, you know, scroll as you go through the level. But, like, the Game Boy ones are really cool because it just looks like you're fucking playing a Game Boy on your TV.
On a portable system, like DS or PSP, too.
Yeah, no, I would totally buy it there. I would rebuy this game everywhere I could, except for computer, because I already have it on XBLA. I'm not really going to be, like, playing that. But it's like, I would buy it on a portable, basically.
Mm. Now, how does it play with the analog stick?
I have no problem with it. You can use the D-pad, and it's the kind of thing, because it's not like you're going up and down, you're just going left to right.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, you really only need to worry about going left to right, and I didn't have any issue with it. I would kind of switch between that and the D-pad, just like how the run button, I think you can have it, like, on the, I forget the placement of the Xbox controllers, but you can either hold a face button down to run, or you can hold the trigger. Mm-hmm. I would usually hold the trigger, but because you kind of have, like, an iron claw on the game, because it gets really intense, sometimes you'll just switch the run button just to kind of give you a little break.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed that this game isn't showing up on WiiWare, or probably won't, I guess we should say.
I'm hugely disappointed.
It's, well, it is 100% not showing up on WiiWare.
Oh,
I
is
think
it like
they're
100%
still
now?
Trying to do a retail release.
All right. Because I feel like it would probably play better on a, you know, proper D-pad.
Classic controller.
I kind of agree.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I don't really have any complaints with how this game plays on 360, but I would prefer to play it with the Wii Remote on side than the 360 controller, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But there's also a bunch of bonus characters, too, that all, like, the different indie games, like Gish or Tim from Raid. There's the kid from I Want to Be the Guy.
Oh, that's
that,
cool.
You unlock some of these by just collecting bandages, which are, like, hidden throughout the different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get them by completing other warp zones that are modeled after the games that these characters come from.
Right.
For anyone that's played I Want to Be the Guy, which is a notoriously, absurdly difficult indie game, the levels that you have to beat to unlock the kid, which I think it's like he's hidden in, like, it might be the last world. I think it's either that or the second to last world. They're absurd. And I spent probably about 2 hours, like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours with a friend of mine trying to beat those three levels. And yeah, it was tough. It was frustrating a little bit, but it was like 2 hours, three levels, three very short levels. And it's just like, cause you know, you basically, it's like, you don't really hit a brick wall as much in that game because you know, like, okay, I can do this. Like, at least that's the feeling I had with it. There was never a time when I was like, oh, this is impossible. Like, I would just keep on trying. Right. And, you know, maybe I'd take a break and go to a different level because there's also, you know, so much content in this game and that, you know, you have, I think, like, something like maybe 100 light world levels and then you have dark world versions of each level, which are absurdly hard. I haven't beaten the dark world yet. I've beaten the main game and unlocked most of the bonus characters, but it's just, there's so much in this game. It's so much fun. It's so challenging, but it's so rewarding at the same time. Like, I beat a level in this game and I feel like I accomplished something.
I'm so jealous.
Super Meat Boy is very high on my games to play list. Like, can't wait to play.
Yeah, like if I had to give a concrete game of the year, this would be it.
Awesome.
Wow.
I played the Flash version. There's a Flash version over on Newgrounds, but that doesn't even really, like, I haven't gone back and played it since I played Super Meat Boy, but, like, Super Meat Boy is on a whole different level than that Flash version. And I've been following this game since it was announced for WiiWare, then never came out on WiiWare. And, like, the wait was worth it because I know they've been working on it for, like, 2 years, really, since it got announced, and it's so good.
Nice.
Awesome.
It just sucks that it's not coming out on WiiWare, and it might not come out on a Nintendo system at all.
Yeah.
So, fucking A, man.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad.
So, I know you read that story on Joystick, Neil, the interview they had with Team Meat. Do you, how much of this blame for this do you put on Nintendo, and how much of the blame for this do you put on Team Meat?
I mean, I talked about this in the forums a lot, and it's the kind of thing where it's like, Nintendo's going to do what Nintendo's going to do. Like, they have that 40 megabyte limit, and there's supposedly some reason that it can't be changed at all. And I think what Nintendo did was they kind of, you know, I guess, were like, hey, Team Meat, come and make this game on WiiWare. And just so everyone gets a story straight, there was never anything where, like, Nintendo requested that they bring Meat Boy to WiiWare. It was more like Nintendo wanted them to bring another game to WiiWare, and that ended up not happening, but they decided to bring Super Meat Boy and work on that for WiiWare.
Yeah.
So there was no, like, Nintendo, you know, set them up and help them make this game. Like, that did not happen. You know, Team Eat, I don't know exactly. I mean, I assume they got paid in some way with XBLA, but I think for the most part it was self-funded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
But, and with Team Eat, you know, I know that it's only two guys working on this game, and I know that they worked, like, day and night for, you know, fucking 2 years to make this game.
Right.
So I don't even really feel like you can fault them as much, because they said as much as that they basically, they got lost in making a game, and they made it way bigger than they initially thought it was. Which I think some people have said that it's like, oh, it's their fault for not planning right. You know what? These guys have been making, like, fucking Flash games. Like, yeah. They don't, like, I mean, it would be nice if everyone could be as efficient as the guys who make the BitTrip games, because they seem to, like, every BitTrip game has come out, like, you know, there's been, like, three a year.
Yeah, like, it's like clockwork.
So, yeah, like, I mean, they're really good at, you know, following methodology and getting the game out there. And, you know, Super Meat Boy, it's like, the dude, like, made a game called, like, Cunt, where you control a penis shooting a vagina. Like, right. These are kind of, like, I guess, like, artsy guys that really just made Flash games.
Right.
So you can't fault them for getting in over their heads on their big, you know, like, console game.
Sure. I mean, look, Super Meat Boy is clearly a labor of love. They want it to be on as many consoles as possible. It's just not feasible right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But
yeah.
I don't play. I mean, I don't think there's really anyone to blame in this. I guess you could say Nintendo for having the limit, or you could say Teammate for going in over their head with, or at least going bigger with the game. But
yeah, I guess for the most part, I think the limit is crap. I know there's some technical limitations, but I can't quite get past the part where they admitted in the interview that they knew there was a limitation and they overestimated their ability to convince Nintendo that it wasn't going to be a problem, or that they could change their minds. Like, to me, like, if they knew and if their business strategy was really, I hope we can convince them to change their minds, that doesn't sit well with me. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're getting tons of love from Xbox Live fans all over the world and Steam fans all over the world. So I think they, more or less, they made the right decision, because I can promise you this game wouldn't be getting an iota of the attention it deserves on WiiWare, because no one follows WiiWare.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
Well, I mean, you can even look at as far as, like, I mean, you could say, like, oh, if Nintendo backed them, you know what Nintendo also backed? Cave Story.
Yep.
And,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think Cave Story did terrible. I don't think it did that good either. And you know what's doing really good? Super Meat Boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Microsoft got behind it. Microsoft put it in that, like, that Game Feast or whatever the hell they had in the fall. Microsoft keeps on bringing it. It has it on the forefront. Like,
I think there's something to be said for the fact that
Summer
Xbox
of Games.
360, Xbox 360 owners are more likely to buy downloadable games than we owners are.
Well, of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Definitely.
Microsoft puts
it's easier
them out
to
there.
Access.
Like, not only is it easier to access, but, like, they actively promote them. Summer of Arcade is something that I look forward to every year, because the games are almost always quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean they have the numbers to back it up, and that, like, those games sell really well. And that's why they had Game Feast in the fall, which had Super Meat Boy and Comic Jumper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Comic Jumper was in that.
Yeah.
And they're gonna have they had the thing last March, I forget what it was called, but it had, like, Perfect Dark XBLA and I think that Toy Soldiers game. And those games sell well because they're associated with this event. And I really wish Nintendo would do something like that. Like,
oh,
I know they kind of did it.
Yeah.
Nintendo of Europe did it, where they have, like, the import festivals with Virtual Console. But I don't really think that does the trick as well as what Microsoft's doing on XBLA.
I mean, look, there was a 2-month period where we got Bionic Commando, Geometry Wars, Braid, and, like, however many other games on Summer of Arcade and XBLA.
Yeah.
We would never see something like that on WiiWare. What's that?
No, I think Explosion Man was the year after, right?
Yeah, Explosion Man was the next year, where we got Marvel vs. Capcom, Trials HD,
Shadow Complex.
And, I mean, come on. You'd never see something like that on WiiWare.
Geometry Wars 2 is one of my most played games of this generation, hands down.
Yeah, like,
I
I put so many hours into that game. And there's no reason that couldn't be on Wii. There's no reason at all it couldn't be on Wii.
Well, Galaxies.
Just,
well, I mean, Geometry Wars Galaxies is a really good game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the highest score.
That's what I ended up doing,
because
I found Geometry Wars Galaxies for $5 and played that a lot instead of getting Geometry Wars 2.
Yeah, it's
the high score battles and high.
I probably made a mistake, because I hear Geometry Wars 2 is amazing, but it's also the kind of thing where it's like, I don't feel expended $10.
Well, the thing about Geometry Wars 2 and me is, like, I loved it, but then it's, like, all I see is Mike Sklens and Johnny Metz, like, beating my score day in and day out, and it's just depressing.
Yeah, that's also, I'm intimidated by that, too, because I know I'm not going to be as good at it, and I'm just going to get pissed off and not play it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I don't play Pac-Man Championship Edition, because it's just, it's depressing.
I spent a lot of time trying to beat Johnny Metz's pacifism score. I tried.
Just, I don't even want to talk about it. It's a sore subject.
So how about we move on to Zach's non-Tendo game or games?
Mm-hmm. What? Huh? Sorry. Huh? I had to wake up there for a second. My non-Tendo game of the year is Darksiders.
Bum, bum, bum.
I just got this about a week ago.
I heard it's like Twilight Princess, but good.
It's the Zelda game we didn't get, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I heard I put 2 hours into it and didn't like it, and then
you gotta play through to the first dungeon, man.
I did get to the first dungeon.
I'm finding the aesthetic to be really irritating. Like I love the
art style.
It has that really, really generic kind of like it feels like the kinds of things that Brutal Legend was trying to make fun of.
Like I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know
man.
About that. I actually didn't like Brutal Legend's aesthetic because it felt a little stretched too thin.
It's funny because I really like that was my favorite thing about Brutal Legend.
Yeah.
Or I really liked Brutal Legend until it became a strategy game, and I was like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah,
that's exactly when I stopped playing too. I love the look of this game. It's very. I think it's pretty. It's got really good character design. Like. The main guy, War, and then his buddy, Samael. Samael looks like Tim Curry in Legend, which automatically
I'm not even really referring to, like, the specific character design or anything. I'm just kind of referring to the overall aesthetic just kind of feels a little too, I don't know, trying to appeal to a 14-year-old dude.
Huh. Yeah, it's like Gears of War. It's Gears of War meets Zelda, that kind of art style.
Yeah.
I can
that's definitely,
see that.
That's a great comparison.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Nate told me there's not a single original idea in the game, and that is absolutely true. But I don't care.
Yeah, and I don't really think that's a terrible thing.
I don't care
because really
everything
it.
Works really well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I
wasn't
really digging
Zelda
the combat that
anymore.
Much.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I wasn't really digging the combat that much, but I did. I played the demo of one of the dungeons. I mean, that's kind of what made me interested in the game. And I really like the puzzles in the dungeon, but I just didn't like the combat.
The late game puzzles are great because you get a portal gun.
Yeah,
oh, that's pretty cool.
And I mean, yeah, it definitely seemed like they were really cool ideas. I guess I would like to see the combat a little more refined. I mean, they're making a sequel, so
they are.
Yeah.
Well, the combat, you know, you upgrade your weapon, but you also get two additional weapons.
You
get a giant scythe, and then you get this big-ass gauntlet that you punch things in the face with.
But the God of War aesthetic didn't bother me too much, and it kind of feels like the same thing, so maybe I just need to give it more time.
Yeah. I really liked it, and I beat it, but now I'm still playing it because I want to get all the collectibles. Like, I just found all the pieces of this abyssal armor. You collect 10 pieces, and you get this fucking kick-ass armor. Now my dude is all blue and flaming, and now he looks like something you'd spend a lot of time trying to gear up in World of Warcraft for.
Awesome.
You know what? Maybe I'll try to goose egg this sometime in the future and give it a second shot, because definitely hearing you talk about it, Zach, does make me feel like maybe I shortchange this game.
And there's a spider boss. That the spider boss is so awesome looking.
Is it Queen Goma?
kind of. She can teleport.
Knew it.
She can teleport, but yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the only thing I don't like about the game is that each enemy only has like one line of dialogue. So you'll come across a group of like these archangels who are trying to kill you, and they're like, he comes. And then another guy in that group sees you, and he's like, he comes! Yeah, we get it, guys.
They
you know, stuff like that. But at least it has voice acting, Zelda.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that.
Well,
I don't want Zelda to get voice acting.
The storyline in Darksiders is kind of cool, and the ending really leaves it open to a lot of better story, too.
Here's the thing. I want Zelda to have voice acting if they're so committed to giving the characters so much goddamn text.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I kind of like, I mean, me with Zelda, I mean, not to get on a complete other tangent, but we are. as far as with the voice acting thing, is that, like, my memories with Zelda lie with Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time. And as long as they're going to keep on with that, I guess, I don't want to say archaic style, but the classic Zelda style, if they ever move past it, which I don't really think they will, like, no. I don't really want to see it change drastically with the voice acting, because when I think Zelda, I think of, you know, the way that the story flowed in Ocarina of Time, the way it wasn't linked to the past. And, if they want to make something new and different, but they need to go full force with it.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know what we saw when Nintendo goes full force with voice acting, and it was fucking Other M. So maybe we don't.
That
need voice
went poorly. Acting. Yeah, that was Sakamoto's. Sakamoto's blunder, though. He had too much free rope there.
On that note, I will say that I will want Zelda voice acting when anyone in a Zelda game has something interesting to say. Because that hasn't happened yet.
Maybe the problem isn't so much that there isn't voice acting, but that the text is terrible.
Yeah.
The writing is awful.
Let's be honest. Zelda has terrible writing.
Yep.
Like,
Can one of you answer a question that I've never asked anybody, but I've always wondered? Why is it every proper noun in a Zelda game is a different color than the rest of the text?
They do that in Darksiders,
to highlight
too.
It. I saw that in a lot of different games.
I saw that in Darksiders, and that cracked me up, because it's
for kids to kind of just give them, like...
It gives you hints for puzzles,
In Mario... I think it's Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, where, like, whenever they mention Bowser, there's a little, like, Bowser icon that shows up next to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really bizarre. I thought it was a translation thing for a long time, but...
I think it just gives you hints
on things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you should go to the west door, and west is blue or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just curious.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just curious. I've always wondered that, but I've never thought to ask anybody who may have an opinion on it.
Speaking of Zelda, I'm going to admit something right now. I don't think... This is my prediction for 2011. I don't think Skyward Sword is going to be mind-blowing.
I don't either. I think it's going to be okay.
More of the same.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be just another Zelda.
I think I will enjoy it more than Twilight Princess.
The funny thing is, at the time, I really liked
Twilight Princess, and now looking back on it, I was just like, Neil, you were wrong. That wasn't that good of a game.
Neil, you are wrong right now. I really enjoy Twilight Princess, and I can't wait to replay it. I am enjoying Wind Waker, although I haven't played it in a while.
Going through that fucking long-ass introduction scene again.
Try going through the woods where you get the Master Sword. That shit is tedious.
It's not like the beloved Wind Waker doesn't have a really protracted tutorial as well.
Oh, it does.
It takes forever, but it's nowhere near as bad.
Yeah, and it's cute as fuck, which makes it easy to manage.
Like, it's kind of funny because when I first played Wind Waker, I wasn't that into it. It seemed like they were short a dungeon, and the Triforce Hunt kind of bothered me. And when I first played Twilight Princess, I love that game. I played the shit out of that game. And now looking back, trying to replay both of them, I can replay Wind Waker. Yeah, I don't like going through the Forsaken Fortress, but I love that game. And Twilight Princess, there's definitely parts of it. If I could just replay the dungeons, I would have a great time. But it's a lot of the overworld stuff just seems like there was so much promise, but it didn't come through. How you have those potentially really awesome horseback battles. It's happens twice in the entire game.
Yeah. And one Twilight time it's Princess. Annoying because you're guarding that stupid cart.
Yeah.
No, Twilight Princess is Nintendo hate fucking Zelda fans. It's just, oh, this is what you want here. Fine. Here's your fucking Ocarina of Time sequel. Yeah. God damn it. Get the fuck out of here.
I really hope Skyward Sword brings... Pretty much.
Jesus.
I want to see Skyward Sword do something a little bit different, but I know it's not going to be completely...
Skyward Sword will be Ocarina of Time with real motion control.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. As far as I'm concerned,
if Skyward Sword's control mechanisms aren't that great, that's the last straw for me being convinced that motion control works in video games.
Yeah.
Really? Honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy it. I think, I'm the only one that's played Skyward Sword so far, and I like the motion plus and everything of what they showed in that demo worked really well.
Yeah.
That's
like,
good.
That's the thing. It's like, I really, that demo was a ton of fun.
But let me ask
I'm...
you, was it any more immersive, or was it just kind of bothersome to have to pull back on the stupid nunchuck to fire your bow?
I thought it worked all really well, and the way that they had the motions in Skyward Sword was kind of more organic. Like, the way you would even, like, throw bombs, like, you could roll it like a ball. You basically do the bowling motion.
Right, no,
like,
I know, because Wii Sports Resort is the testing ground for Zelda.
Yeah, but like that all works really well, and it doesn't really feel that obtrusive.
I just feel like I'm always worried, because every time you hear Nintendo say anything about Skyward Sword, they're like, well, we're getting there. It's just that we haven't really figured out the art or the plot or the writing.
Well, the funny thing is that E3, at E3 at the developer roundtable, Miyamoto said something along the lines of, like, we've pretty much, like, got everything. Like, we're working on the final dungeon or something. And, like, we're just working on getting the art style set. Because that was, like, the last thing that we did. We did things a little bit different this time.
But doesn't that bother you that they didn't have a core concept right away?
No. But Zach, here's the thing. That was back June, E3.
Okay, that's true.
About two weeks ago. There was, like, an interview where Miyamoto said they were halfway done the game.
Oh, what the fuck?
Halfway done? So, I mean, obviously it's not coming out in Q1, or else we'd know about it. Maybe, like, I don't think it's coming out until Q4.
Okay.
I mean, we're kind of getting into predictions here.
Okay, when you say something like, when he says something like that, it makes me think that they've had to restart this shit a lot. Like, they've had to wipe clean the slate. Yeah, like,
no, I mean,
how many...
look,
Miyamoto went and done fucked up that tea table, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know that this Zelda's been in development for, what, like 4 years? Like, they talked about...
Twilight Princess came out, yeah.
Yeah, like, pretty much right afterwards, they started talking about how, oh, the next one's already in development, and it should have been out in a couple years, cut to 4 years later. I mean, look, they've been getting there for about 7 years now. Like,
it's
been a long
time. If it
time.
Comes out and it's the same kind of progression, same kind of, you know, boss battle, same kind of storyline, I'm going to be massively disappointed. Like, if you throw real motion control in there, that's not nearly enough.
No.
I mean, we've been playing the same Zelda game since Link to the Past, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to see him,
like,
take...
you know, stuff like Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker iterated on that really well, I thought, by introducing new things, you know. I mean, Ocarina of Time, it's just like a 3D remake of Link to the Past, almost.
But it's really engaging.
Like, Ocarina of Time is fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean,
does anybody else... Am I the only one who wants to see another take on what Zelda 2 was trying to accomplish?
I don't want anything to do with anything remotely close to Zelda 2.
I'd like to see a 2D Zelda game. Although, you know what, Andy, if you made a 2D Zelda game, they'd call it Metroid.
Yeah, I suppose. No, but like, okay, so Zelda 2 has a lot of problems. Everyone is more than willing to acknowledge that, and I would agree, even though I really enjoy the game. But you take away some of those problems, there are some cool ideas there. A 2D side-scrolling Zelda with RPG mechanics, it's set in a familiar environment, the Zelda universe, there's a lot to mine there. Like, why not take a stab at improving the formula that Zelda 2 could have established if it had been a better game?
So what you're saying is...
awesome, actually.
Like a Castlevania game now.
Yep. Legend of Zelda Returns by Retro Studios coming in 2015.
Zelda 2 Returns.
Yeah.
Specifically Zelda 2 Returns.
It has to have a critical motion mapped to an imprecise control.
Adventures of Link Return.
Mm-hmm.
Adventures of Link Rebirth.
How about we just do one of Ganon Returns?
I guess here's what I'm saying. Like, I love Nintendo games, but more than that, I think I love the characters. Like, I'm attached to the characters and to the environments and to the universe.
Sure.
I wouldn't mind, honestly, seeing those familiar elements in a new kind of game. Like, you know, we got Metroid Prime, and Metroid Prime took a familiar game that we all knew and loved and took it into a new genre.
Right.
And that was kind of cool, and I wouldn't mind seeing more things like that. You know, Donkey Kong Country did the same thing. It took Donkey Kong and put it into a platforming side-scroller.
Right.
That was cool.
Well, I think
I want to see that more, that kind of thing more often.
I think the issue here is that the action-adventure genre has just been stale for however many years now.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say since Resident Evil 4, what's really changed?
God of War was kind of different, right?
I mean, but you could say that was really just riffing on Devil May Cry.
It was a more simplified Devil May Cry,
And Gauntlet.
Well, yeah. I mean, so I think the bigger problem is that Zelda, which is, I mean, I don't know. I guess you could say it's sort of the poster child for the genre. Really, I mean, it's done a lot of innovating in that arena. I mean, where does that genre go? I think that's the problem with Zelda. Like, where do you go from here?
Right. Yeah. Well, what they need to do is kind of reboot the thing. They need to add, like, totally new items and weapons. They'd have to have a new storyline. You know, I've said in the forums before, I think it would be really cool if you played in, I don't want to say a ride and roll, but somebody who's on a separate quest, but from the distance can see Link doing his thing. And so you're not in control of Link, but you watch his progress bit by bit over the game. And then towards the end of the game, once you realize the scope of this, your two paths meet. And
well, the only problem with something like that is that Link doesn't mean anything. Link's not the same person from game to game.
Link is an avatar for the player. I mean, he's not really a character.
That's
Link
true,
is
you
Link
could
is the
set
casual
it
observer.
In you could set it in a established Zelda universe, like Link to the Past.
I guess.
I suppose if you're willing to revisit a specific title, then that might work.
Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of wanted to see like an origin game for Ganon. I mean, I've always thought. Like,
oh yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Oh god, that would be awesome.
You know, like
that would be really.
He's
cool.
always been sort of, especially in later games, he's kind of shown to be kind of a sympathetic character in certain respects. So I think there's a lot to mine there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, my thing that like I just remember as a kid is just being kind of enthralled in the mythology.
Of
time.
Yeah.
I mean. And I just feel like that was lost somewhere along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I mean, definitely. Look, there is...
And, like, Wind Waker was kind of the pinnacle of that.
Oh, sure. I mean, look,
that was wonderful.
The point in Wind Waker, when you go underwater and you find Hyrule...
Oh, that's
there
so
are, there are not many moments like that in video games anymore.
No.
There's been no moment like that before or since in any Zelda game, that's for damn sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a beautiful moment, and there's, like, no action in it. Just walking across frozen statues in Castle Hyrule, or in Hyrule Castle, and going underground and seeing the story of Ocarina of Time as played out through, like, stained glass
is awesome. Stained glass pictures,
The only moment in a Zelda game I can think of that approaches that, and maybe even rivals it, is the closing few hours of the 72 hours in Majora's Mask. They're, like, right before the world ends, you see Clock Town packing up, calling it a day. They're going to die, and they know it. And you see it in the dialogue and even in the body language to some extent. Like, the way that world changes, and then right before the apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Like, there's an apocalypse in a Zelda game.
Sure.
Where's that? I want to see that again.
Well, no,
that
I mean,
was amazing.
Look at something
like
Link's Awakening. You know, look at something like Link's Awakening, which is like the downfall of a reality.
Oh, such a great game.
Yeah.
That might be my favorite Zelda, now that you bring that up.
It's my second favorite Zelda of all time.
It's been so long since I played that game.
I will
totally buy the shit out of that on virtual handheld.
Dude, get
it's,
DX.
It's really pretty
amazing
when you approach the egg and you send out the instruments, because you don't really know what's going to happen the first time you play it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Link's Awakening is a very, very special game, and I think it never... I mean, it gets its due from some people, but I think it's really overlooked as just being, oh, it's the Game Boy Zelda.
I think that
Zelda.
Will be one of the best-selling games on virtual handheld.
Is it? Are you thinking it will be?
That's one of the two that was confirmed. Actually, I think Link's Awakening DX and Super Mario Land were the two that were confirmed at the event.
I mean, that makes sense.
In Japan, back in September.
Is it DX or is it the original version? Do you know?
I think it's DX.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
DX is awesome. It's a very, very,
that's,
very special
I,
game.
That's the one I've got. I mean, I had them both, but I bought DX because of the color dungeon.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's a lot better. I mean, Link's Awakening on its own is a really, really good game, but DX just pushes it over to the next level. And I mean, you know, I've played the Oracle of Ages and Seasons games, and they're okay.
Finish them.
Yeah, they're all right. Like, they're not that good.
Like,
did you guys ever play Minish Cap?
I did play Minish
Cap. Yeah, Minish Cap
was
okay.
I really liked it.
I'm borrowing it from a friend of mine. I haven't gotten to play it yet, but I've been meaning to.
I'm
pretty much burned out on the overhead 2D Zelda games. I don't know if you knew this or not, Carl. I sat down about a year and a half ago to play through all the Zeldas in chronological order, and I burned through like the first four pretty quick because you know. But then, like right around Oracle of Seasons,
They get slow.
It just stalled, and I never made it through those two games. I made it through Seasons after pushing. I never made it through Oracle of Ages. I barely even tried. I played like for 25 minutes, and I was just so incredibly uninterested in it. I would never play Minish Cap again. I don't ever want to play another 2D Zelda game, like another new one. In fact, I've never played the ones on DS. I played like the first 4 hours maybe of Phantom Hourglass, but I just don't care anymore. I just don't care anymore. And then I went back to Majora's Mask and loved it. Absolutely loved it. So,
well, what I love about Majora's Mask is that it completely turns the Zelda formula on its head with the whole day pattern thing. And I think that's something that they need to do again with Zelda. I mean, I guess you could say that they try with Twilight Princess, bringing the whole, like, you know, Twilight Dimension and the whole wolf mechanic. And I
mean, look, it was a wasted opportunity.
It was. I mean, look, I appreciate that they gave it a shot, and I think it did bring a little bit of something new to the franchise, but it basically felt like, well, we threw in this part of this game. We really liked Okami. We really want to see stuff like that. Like, I don't know. It didn't really strike true for me. And I think with Zelda, what they need to do is they just need to tear it down. Like, tear it down and build it back up.
Right.
So, we'll see.
I think that's it.
All right.
There you go.
I think we just newscasted.